Are we witnessing a bloodless revolution in the United States? Who's running the show? What is going on in politics on this slice of fresh bread? Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread. Fresh Bread, where we're bringing the truth of God's Word to a starving world. Fresh Bread, podcast 71. And yes, this will be another podcast on current events. And we just want to always remind you that no matter what we're talking about here, no matter how dark and weird it gets, that God is on His throne and our Lord reigns and He's in control. We're not. And even though things seem to be spinning out of control in our world right now, He is in control. He is sovereign. He is over all of it. And so we rely on Him and we trust Him as we go through it all. It seems like every week something historic is happening in our country. So I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. And Pastor Brandon, this election year just keeps getting more stranger and stranger as the weeks go on. Past weekend, we had on Sunday, July 21st, President Joe Biden announced that he would not run for re-election. And he did it by sending a letter on X. Or did he? That's the question. But he said he would not run for re-election. So this opens the can of worms. What's going on? So Pastor Brandon, what do you think is going on? What's happening?
Well, I think that ultimately, you have the situation that's going on. You know, the can of worms was opened, I think, with the assassination attempt, where you had Trump almost killed. I happen to believe that if, at the very least, I think the Secret Service or whoever is behind all of that, at the very least, I think that they left the door wide open for this kid to do this, at the very least. There does seem to be reason to believe that he didn't act alone, that he was assisted. You know, there's some connections that I've seen, there's some odd connections with cell phones and, where he's been tied to, some agencies in Washington and, where he's had some contact with people that would basically indicate an inside job. And there's just so many questions around the kid and, how he was able to do what he did. I mean, what I'm saying is there are at the very least, I don't think he acted alone, and very well could be that he acted in concert with some sort of governmental, something behind, maybe not the FBI, maybe not the CIA, but something, some sort of shadow organization, that wanted Trump, that would profit from Trump being killed. And so I say that to say all of this snowball, I mean, it obviously came before that. I mean, all the things that are going on in the world, I don't think are going on by mistake. But this can of worms has been opened probably where, I mean, let's face it, they tried to kill Trump in public, in front of live TV. I mean, that was being covered. I mean, when it happened. And so, that we saw it happen. And so I think that basically what's happened is that the evil is showing itself at this point. And there's some things that have happened since then. I think we're going to get into some things that have happened since then, with now the change of the regime. You've got this situation that, which is specifically your question. And, I think that here's my theory. My theory is that the assassination attempt failed, and they know that they can't win with Biden as the figurehead. And I say that because I don't think Biden was anything more than a figurehead. I think he was the public mouthpiece, if you want to call him that, but the public mouthpiece for, this executive branch that I think has kind of, I think it includes, a lot of people behind the scenes that are pulling the strings. And so, the assassination attempt didn't work. And, and I think they see that Biden can't win, in a in anywhere near a fair election, he can't win. I think they've realized that they can't even cheat enough to make him win. I mean, that's how flawed he is at this point. You know, when the American people realize that he actually does have dementia, I mean, and it's crazy to me because, I mean, that people wouldn't realize that up until now, but the debate, you know, which happened prior to the assassination attempt, the debate made it clear that the man is, you know, needs care. He doesn't need to be a president, and he doesn't have the ability to be president. And I think that's pretty clear to the American people. And so he's a flawed candidate that I don't think he is electable. And then you try to assassinate Trump, and that doesn't work. And so I think the next step is basically a coup, which is really, I don't know that he stepped down willingly, and yet I think that they forced him out. And so I think part of that forcing him out was saying that you can stay on until, you know, January. So whatever the switch of power is, whether it's from Biden to Trump or Biden to Harris at this point, I think that was part of the deal, that he can stay until January and kind of ride out the whole thing. But I do see this as a coup on Biden, and you know, the fact that everyone sort of stepped in behind and said, look, we're going to have, I mean, all these delegates are going to basically go toward Harris. And, you know, I think Obama was, you know, talked about, you know, an open convention and all that, but that's just window dressing, in my opinion. I think that they're going to just push Harris right on through. And I have my opinion as to why.
Well, yeah, part of that, I think, is the fundraising, the money, right? Harris's name is on with Biden. So if she stays on, she can get some of that campaign money that was pledged to Biden, right? Is that part of it?
Well, I think the money's already been moved over. I mean, I think that, I mean, whatever, that's several million, I mean, multiple, right. multiple tens of millions of dollars. And I forget what the number exactly is, but I think that money's already been, it's already earmarked toward Harris, you know, because of what you're saying, they're tied together. Yeah. And that money gets to be pushed over to the Harris campaign, since Biden willingly, at least publicly willingly, stepped aside.
Yeah, and I don't want to jump ahead because I want to talk about more about the Harris and what happened there. But back to Biden just for a second here. So you believe he was pressured. He is not they're making this out to be, he's heroic for stepping, I guess he said in his letter, standing down. He's heroic. He's this great historical figure.
Well, I think it's all part of the plan. I think that if they can make him look like a hero for stepping aside, and so what's going to happen is they're going to make him look like a hero for stepping aside. I don't think that's what happened. I don't think he is a hero for stepping aside. I think he stood in their way, and they found a way around him, and whatever that is, they found a way around him. And I think that what's going to happen is that they're making him in to be the hero because he's giving way to what I think they would envision as a better future. And when I say that, you have Harris, who now will be the face of the administration. You know, even though Biden is still there. Now, I don't quite understand why, and we're not to November yet, so, or to January yet, but I don't quite understand why they're leaving Biden in, because I think politically would be more advantageous for Harris to become president and actually run the campaign from the Oval Office, and having the office and running the country, so to speak, and she becomes the conquering or the one who sort of sets things straight. And, you know, there's all this chaos, but all of a sudden she steps in and now everything's good, and, you know, she's going to run in November. And I think what's going to happen is they're going to run on a, basically their big push is going to be that she's a woman. She's not white. She's a non-white woman. I'm going to be interested to see who her running mate will be. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't continue that whole line of non-white woman, or, you know, somebody that that's the whole thing. It really comes down to the DEI issue, right? I mean, it's the whole equity and diversity, and you know that you know we need to have equity, that equity of outcome, and so that you have this woman president who basically has pulled herself up by her bootstraps, kind of gal, but she's going to be branded as sort of a trailblazer, and she's going to be talked up by people like Hillary Clinton, who, you know, basically Hillary Clinton's going to be seen as a trailblazer herself. You know, she came a long time before her time, and she opened up the opportunity for Harris, and you know that there's going to be other celebrated figures. I don't know, you know, names at this point, but there's going to be other celebrated figures. Obama will be one of them that opened up the way for a black president. And so Hillary for opening up the way for a woman, I made the statement, and you guys have reminded me of it quite often, but I didn't think Trump or Biden, either one, would be president in January. At the time, I didn't know what the playbook would be. Still don't quite know completely what the playbook is, but I would argue that at this point that they're going to play the DEI, they're going to play the racism card, they're going to play they're going to celebrate these things to the point where basically the middle voter, the person in the middle who doesn't care that much about politics and, you know, would rather just kind of live their life, but I think they're going to create a wave of, this is such a great thing that we have a, you know, we have a woman, we have a black woman who's going to be a president, that she's come so far, and it's a symbol of our country and how far our country has come. And on the other side, you have Trump, who's a white male, and you have Vance, Trump, who's an old white male, and you have Vance, who's a young white male. And basically, it's going to be played as you have the old guy who's becoming president, who's grooming the young guy, and status quo, nothing's changed, and if you're a woman or if you're a minority, if you're gay, you're not going to have any opportunity in that world, the Trump and Vance world, because they're against those things. It's the white patriarchy versus everybody else. And what I think is going to happen is that obviously the left, those who are staunchly left, are going to go, you know, party line, like, no doubt about it. This is the greatest thing that's ever happened. It's already happening. I mean, I have people in my family and friends that I know that are celebrating this whole thing, that, you know, let's get the old man Trump up against this young woman, basically young woman Harris, and she's going to wipe the floor with him. And, you know, that Harris is such a great candidate, and she's going to unify the party. And I think that what's going to happen is you're going to see 2008 on steroids. 2000, because I mean, that was what, I mean, if you think about it, with Obama, the Obama White House, I mean, the Obama election was all about inclusivity, and we're going to have a new, it's all going to be different now, and we're all going to be standing together, how great it is to have a black president. And, you know, how far did that go? And where, how much unity did we have during the Obama presidency? And I would argue that he was the most divisive president divisive president we've ever had. And so I think they're just going to use that same playbook, except that Harris now is going to be not only black, but she's going to be a woman. And so, and let me, anybody that knows me knows that I'm not racist, I'm not against having a black president if that's what happens. But the point is that what's going to happen is they're going to create division where there really isn't division.
How did she go from zero delegates when she ran in 2020? She was one of the most unpopular people who ever ran. And now she's like this incredible historical figure.
Yeah, because the machine's behind her now.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get the machine behind you, when I say the machine, I'm talking about the rich and the wealthy, the incredibly wealthy, you know, those who are running the country. But I'm also talking about the media. What you're going to find is the national media, the mainstream media, is going to make her look like she's a superstar. I mean, it literally, they will make her look like she has zero flaws. And I mean, they will clean her up and make her look like she's a super candidate and that she's the next coming of whatever. Ultimately, that's what they did with Obama. Nobody ever knew who he was, yeah. Right? I mean, he was just this obscure nobody in terms of politically. And all of a sudden, he goes from that to senator to now he's the president of the United States. And has, you know, like, what's his history? I mean, all the conspiracy theories. And we're not going to talk about that. But the point is that the mainstream media got behind Obama. And the rich and wealthy, and we're talking about, you know, billionaire people that, you know, the richest and the wealthiest in this country, the 0.1% of the 0.1% kind of people that are behind the scenes, you know, they got behind him and they pushed him to the top. And I think that's what's happening to Harris. And I'm not going to say that Trump has no chance of winning at this point. I'm going to say that he would have been way better off running against Biden versus running against this, what's going to happen with Harris. So I'm telling you, this thing is going to, I don't, at this point, I'm not 100%, like, it's not one of those things where I'm going, yeah, for sure. But I can tell you that it would certainly not surprise me in the very least that Harris gets elected and by a landslide. And so,
wow.
And so, because I think landslide. That, well, because we have a long time to go. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I don't mean to be doom and gloom, but we've got a long way to go in the election. And I think what's happening is that Trump has, he peaked at the RNC. And I think that was where, I would say he peaked right before the RNC. I think that there were some things at the RNC that were problematic. I think he's going more mainstream. I think he's trying to win the middle. You know, I think he's given up on some things that, I don't know, that I can't 100% say given up. I would say he's been more public on some things in terms of, you know, where he stands, you know, with what I think would be his core. Because I think he feels like he has the core,
mm-hmm.
But I'm afraid what's going to happen in his as he moves more toward the middle, as he moves more left overall, I think what's going to happen is that he may keep his core, but I don't think he's ultimately going to win the people thinks he's going to win, and I think he's going to end up. I think he's going to end up being problematic. And I think that if you put that together with Harris and what's going on with Harris and with, you know, how they're you know, basically going to make her a diversity, equity, and inclusion type candidate, a DEI candidate. And I'm telling you, this assassination attempt is probably going to be so far in the rearview mirror come November that we're not even going to. I mean, you and I are probably still going to be talking about it, but I'm talking about on a national level. I think it's going to go away. I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I think that there's more going on than meets the eye. And I'm not necessarily talking about, I didn't believe that, you know, some people believe that Biden was, you know, died over the weekend. I never believed that. I think he's still alive. I think I think he may have been sick. I think there may have been some sort of health issue that created some angst and I think that's probably what led to him stepping down. And so I don't know what's behind that. No way to know at this point. But I do think it was orchestrated to some degree. I do think he was forced out. And so, you know, I think that's the playbook now is to get on Harris's side and really push the Harris presidency as a historic moment in our country. And I think that there are people in our country that are so, and even people who call themselves Christians, I think that are so tied up into this woke moment that I think that it'll just be a, I think it'll just be a tidal wave that, that will sweep her to the presidency.
Yeah, I can see that. My thought is that I really believe that Joe Biden did die and that there's a body double and they used an AI to do that telephone call. And you asked me why would they do that? My theory is that they would announce that Biden has passed away at the convention, make a big deal out of how great he was, but then also usher in Harris as this.
Yeah, I don't see any upside to that. I do see upside to him. I don't see any upside in the sense of why do it that way. I mean, if he died, then, you know, she's going to, I mean, she gets to be the conquering hero that sort of rights the ship, and she becomes president, and there's no downside to that, right? There's no downside to that in the sense of, I mean, if they hide it and somehow it gets like it people find out they hid it, there's a lot of downside to that. Although I think there's a lot of downside to, you know, somebody planning an assassination or at least leaving the door open. So, you know, they've definitely been willing to do things that I think they're brazen enough at this point to do things that we wouldn't imagine them doing. I mean, even if it's just that they left the door open for assassination, I mean, I say just, but it's terrible if that's what they did. I mean, that's bad enough. And here we are, you know, a week later, it's like, well, you know, that we saw that. It's almost like we can't believe what we saw. And mm-hmm. and so for them to do what you're saying, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be surprising to me if they do that. I just don't see the upside.
Yeah, my thought is they couldn't announce it when it happened because of Trump was almost killed. So if Biden dies, it looks really suspicious that all of a sudden he dies at a good time where they can bring in Harris. That's why I think they're going to announce it later. Or that maybe he will pass away. Maybe he is. My thought is that he had a mini stroke. Because if you look at the story, what happened in Nevada, something serious happened. They were actually going to take him to the hospital. There, all these things are documented. The local police were ready for him to go to the hospital in Nevada. The Secret Service decided to fly him back to the East. If you read the story, the plane was flying so fast it was shaking. They were trying to get him there. So it might have been some kind of mini stroke. And he's had strokes in the past. Maybe this is something where they know that he doesn't have much time. His brother even sent that weird letter where, you know, I'm just looking forward to spending the remaining time I have with my brother. So there's so many weird things going on. And like you were just saying, how do we believe our government? How do we believe our media anymore? They were covering Biden for how long?
Yeah, I don't believe the mainstream media any further than I can. Like, I don't, I stopped believing the mainstream media. I don't even know how long ago. I don't even remember the last time I watched, you know, the NBC Nightly News and thought, oh, these guys are telling me the truth. it certainly hasn't been in the past decade. I don't know. Yeah.
You have to admit, the way he did it, right? Sending out that letter on X.
Oh, it's
with the signature that doesn't look like him.
Yeah, I mean, it's something. Did he come on last night? By the way,
they showed him getting out of the. But here's my.
But they said he was going to be on
tonight. He does it 8 o'clock.
Oh, tonight at 8. Okay.
This is Wednesday. We're recording this.
Yeah.
But I think that was a body double. I mean, he could be. I think he's dead. So I think, I mean, but this is what happens when your government lies and media lies. It opens the door.
Yeah, you don't know what to believe.
And there's so many weird things that are going on.
Yeah. Live not by lies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think here's my theory. This is sort of getting into, you know, even further as to what the agenda is. If you remember, you know, back when Obama was elected, the country was in a much different place. You know, there, you know, if you look at, you know, things like crime you know, we were a different place. Cities were relatively safe. I'm not saying every city was safe, but compared to where we are today, the cities were relatively safe. You know, in terms of race relations, I would say never been perfect. Not certainly not saying that they were ever perfect, but I would say that we were in a better position, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago than we were. So 2008, let's just say 2008, right? That's when Obama was elected. So prior to 2008, so 2008 was what, 16 years ago.
Yeah.
So I would say race relations were so much better back then. You know, we didn't have, you know, there was the controversies of, you know, what do you do with homosexuals, marriage, and all of that. There was questions about it, but by and large, the country was not for homosexual marriage. We didn't hear about transsexuality. That was something that, you know, yes, it was there. It was something that was a concept, but it wasn't. There was no, you know, seeking for rights for, you know, transsexuals. There was certainly wasn't any, let's turn our kids into transsexual type, you know, situations. You know, by and large, I mean, if you think about relative to where we are today, these things didn't exist. But, you know, starting in 2008, all of those things systematically began to happen. And I think what's happened is that we've seen, I don't know, you know, what is behind it. And I mean, ultimately, I know it's demonic and it's satanic, right? I don't know, you know, when you look at our country, what is behind it. But I do think that there is somehow, somebody's pulling some strings to really to create revolution. And the way you create revolution is by making people mistrust one another. And you just said it. You just said it. What can we believe, right? So when you don't know what you can believe, it ends up creating questions, right? It ends up creating animosities because now I don't know who I can trust. It's not just who I can believe and what I can believe, but now I don't even know who I can trust, right? There's a level of mistrust that's happening in our society. Well, where is that coming from? I think it's coming from, you know, people pushing, you know, racism 2.0, you know, where now it's not just that, and it's not just, you know, that I am racist personally against someone, but there's this, the society is set up against if you're not white, if you're not male, if you're not white, that there's something that's against you and that's holding you back, and it's creating problems, it's creating animosities in our society. So that who gets blamed? Well, the white man gets blamed, right? Even though I, as a white man, I'm not racist, I haven't done anything personally against someone, yet I am considered to be racist because I'm part of the patriarchy, right? Because I'm white and because I'm male, I'm racist. And so you're creating these animosities, and basically it's tearing at the fabric of the society. It's tearing against what, you know, the very core of who we are as humans. And so let me ask you this. If you listen to the mainstream media, it's clear that they feel like that there's racism going on all the time. But has that been the experience of what you've seen?
No.
Now, some people would say, well, that's because you're a white male, right? So you're not woke, right? You don't know, right? But what's happening is that the forces are creating situations where they're making people have animosities that they wouldn't normally have, right? So I'll give you another one. The whole situation of how people were raised and like, you know, I'm who I am because I was like, my parents were like being a product of how you're raised. Like I struggle in this way because I was raised in a home that was this, you know, like my struggles have to do with how I was raised.
So like I was raised in a country club and you were raised in a trailer park.
Yes. Yes.
So there's a difference there.
Yes. And so instead of it being we would say that there are, that everybody's created equal, right? I'm created equal. You're created equal, and you know, God created us the same, right? Equal, not the same, but equal, right? And but we would say that, you know, the outcome of your life has then to do with like how hard you worked and like so there's this, you know, maybe you work harder than I do and you make it further than I do. Maybe I have a good break and you have a bad break. And so even though by all rights you ought to have made it further than I did, you had this bad break in your life and something changed that, right? And I end up being ahead of you at the end, like at the outcome. Well, what if you've noticed that over the past few decades, it hasn't been that. It's been a focus on the things that are against you. Like if you're black or if you're female or if you're you know, from a certain background of life, that you deserve help because you have all these things against you. Like there's no, so it's all about equality, not equality like you and I would think of equality, but equality of outcome, that you deserve the same kind of outcome that I deserve, right? Or that I have. And so if I end up ahead of you on this game, in this game we call life, then you have the right to take away from me. You have the right to say, hey, you need to give some to me because I'm behind you. I didn't have the opportunities that you had. But what that creates, here's the problem. Well, there's a lot of problems, but this is the main problem. It creates animosities. Like I look at the person, you know, so for me, I look at the millionaire and say, well, you know, why does he have all that? Why shouldn't I get the boat? Why shouldn't I have the car, the nice car? Why shouldn't I have the nice house? So, you know, I'm having to live my, you know, lower middle class life. Why shouldn't I get all that? But for the poor, and you know, they're saying, well, you know, why should the middle class have what they're having? Why shouldn't I have that? Why shouldn't I get that? And I think what's happening is that those animosities are being stirred at a societal level where we're being divided. Like we're literally being divided. And you see that even in the church where, you know, you have all these DEI, you know, the woke theology that's coming into the church. I mean, this is a, you know, theological conversation. I mean, there's a lot of politics here, but you have that coming into the church where now we don't know who to trust, right? I mean, have you sensed that? I mean, have you sensed that? I mean, for me, it's like, you know, back 25 years ago when I became a Christian, you know, it's pretty clear who to trust and who not to, right? But now I don't know who to trust. And I think it's because we have all of these ideologies that are being brought into the church and are creating division. It's being done on purpose is what I'm saying, Keith, is that we're being pitted against one another, which is creating more chaos, and they're taking advantage of the chaos.
So you talked about revolution. Do you believe that there is some kind of silent revolution going on right now?
I think there's a bloodless revolution, absolutely. And I think that's what's happening, is that they're pitting people against each other. We don't know who to trust. Therefore, you know, we're sort of like we're in a dark room and we're groping, right? Trying to figure out who is the enemy and where's the enemy. And eventually what happens is people begin to shoot without knowing who the enemy actually is. And unfortunately, in many cases, it ends up being that it's somebody else basically pitting us against one another, and we don't even realize it.
Well, getting back to this biblically, God's word to a starving world, what you're saying is that when you look at somebody has something I don't have, that's envy.
Yes.
We're not supposed to be envy,
yes,
of somebody. Because God, I always think of God's word talking about we're clay. Sometimes it talks about making a beautiful dish, something that's used, and then sometimes he uses something where it's used to actually go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and talks about the pottery. we can't control that. God is in control of that. So as we look at that, we don't see what you're, you know, what you're describing, but I know for the progressives, the only way they can gain power is like you were talking about, these divisions, right?
Yes, that's right.
Separate.
That's right.
And bring in as many people with them as they can.
Well, what happens is that people want, by and large, people want peace, right? And so right now there's division. So what's going to happen is that at some point they're going to be able to say, well, if you want peace, this is what you have to do. But it's going to be, you need to give up this freedom, this freedom, this freedom, this freedom, this freedom, in order to for there to be peace. I mean, we're already seeing it. I mean, you're seeing it at the level of environmentalism. I mean, that's another piece of this puzzle where, you know, we're destroying the earth and we want to take away these freedoms from you because you shouldn't be free to drive your own car. That's taking away your autonomy because you don't have the ability to get around, at least without public transportation. I mean, all of these things are feeding into this major issue, this major agenda to basically control the world, basically control, you know, humans and ultimately make them less than human. I mean, if you think about it, if the Constitution was, and the Declaration of Independence said, you know, basically life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, if that is true, then ultimately who has control? Nobody can have, if I have freedom, you know, of living my life and freedom of liberty and a freedom of happiness, then I have control of my life. Ultimately, I would say, ultimately our creator, that, you know, that God is the one who controls, that I'm living before him and I have the right to do those things and, you know, before him. But if you're on the other side and you're looking for power, you don't want me to have those freedoms. You don't want me to have, it's all about control. And so that's what's happening here, is that they're creating so much chaos in society. They're creating divisions that ultimately the society is going to say, but we want it like it used to be. We want to have peace, and they're going to come in and say, okay, well, this is how you have peace. You have peace by giving up all these freedoms. You have peace by giving up, you know, these pursuits, these godly pursuits, ultimately.
This almost sounds like a communist manifesto.
Well, I think it is communism. I don't think it's named, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because I just heard something the other day where he talked about, if you look at the Communist Party in the United States, it's almost dead. Like, it's not even, the Communist Party has almost no power.
Yeah.
I mean, they're nothing, right? But communism is alive and well. I mean, that is the communism. It's just a different name, right? It's now, you know, DEI, or it's, you know, it's under a different name, but it's the same issue. I mean, it's the same enemy, right? Because ultimately, Satan doesn't want... He wants to kill humanity, and that's what and communism has how many millions of lives? I want to say something like 100 million people, and you know, to you and I, that's horrible, right? That 100 million people would die under communist regimes, but to them that are after power, I don't think that's anything. I don't think they care, right? Because they're trying to, because ultimately they're subhuman. Right, that's the ultimate issue, is that I think they're being influenced demonically, and I think that there are forces that are being influenced demonically in order to do the things that we're doing, in order to hurt humanity, in order to ultimately control the world. And I mean, biblically that makes sense, because biblically it's we're moving toward a one world government. We see it. I mean, that's what's happening. And one way to get rid of, you know, to go to a one world government, you obviously have to get rid of a country like the United States. Well, how are you going to do it? And I think it's to create all these divisions and chaos so that we just give up our freedoms, so that we just, you know, willingly give it up. Instead of having to do it at gunpoint, we willingly do it.
Is that why you think that our country, with Biden and Harris, believe that we shouldn't have borders? We're the only country in the world that doesn't have borders.
Well, I think
we're just allowing
again. Because it again, what's happening is they're setting us against one another, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. the it's creating animosities where I don't think there needs to be animosities. There needs to be a rule of law. The issue with immigration is not that the immigrant is bad. They're trying to make it out to be that all these immigrants that are coming in are bad people. Well, they're not bad people. I mean, I'm sure there are bad people amongst them.
Oh yeah.
But they're bad people in the sense that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. But these people are looking for opportunity. By and large, a lot of these people are coming into the country. They're flooding into our country because the border's open and they're looking for opportunity. Now, I will say, obviously, there's going to be some that are sown into that. There's going to be some enemy there's some people who are truly against our country that are sown into that. But what's happening is that they're creating these animosities against the immigrant. Whereas we have been a nation of people who a nation made up of people who are coming into our country, and foreigners coming in and assimilating and becoming part of the United States, that they're taking up our language, they're taking up our culture, they're becoming a part of the United States. Well, now you have this flood of immigrants that are coming in, and they're unwilling to change. They're coming in and they're bringing their own cultures. Well, it's weakening the American culture. It's weakening our country, and I think it's being done on purpose, and it's being done to create again even more chaos and division, and where ultimately we're going to be in a position where some people are going to call out and say, you got to make it right, you got to help it, you got to fix this, and they're going to say, well, if you want to fix it, this is how you're going to fix it. You're going to fix it by giving up all these freedoms.
Yeah, I see that. Do you think Harris is going to get the nomination?
Yes, I think Harris is going to get it. I think it's going to be celebrated. I think that it is going to be considered the greatest triumph ever, that, just 4 months, 4 or 5 months before, I think that she wasn't even on the radar ultimately, 5 months before it. Biden steps aside. He's going to be lauded as a hero for stepping aside because we needed somebody that could take us to the next level. I think that you're going to have Harris come in. I think she's going to be painted as this incredibly charismatic leader who is, female, who is black, who, is really the very representation of this DEI woke ideology. And I think ultimately she's going to win. She's going to beat the patriarchy in Trump and Vance, and she's going to be inaugurated in January. And I think that's going to be the watershed moment of many watershed moments for our country.
So do you think Biden will finish his term?
Doubtful.
Okay.
I don't think he's pulling a Weekend at Bernie's right now. That's my opinion, but I don't think
I'm close to believing that.
Well, you just said earlier you do believe it, but
I'm not sure. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say is what do you believe?
What do I believe?
Is he alive or not? Why haven't we seen him? Where's Jill Biden been?
Well, we have seen him.
Well, we've seen him get out of a limo from a distance. How do you know that's not a body double?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we don't know that it was an AI for sure. That with
that phone call was weird because he was so energetic and and she almost, if you noticed, Harris said, "I knew you were still on the phone."
Yeah,
she almost said recording.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was weird, and the whole incident was weird. The Vegas incident's weird. The transfer of power on a Sunday, like without any. He didn't come before the American people and say, hey, this is what's happening, that I'm stepping down. That's what, Nixon came before the American people. Johnson came before the American people. Very similar to Johnson in that sense, but Johnson actually came before the American people. Biden didn't. And yeah, it's very, very weird, but I think he's still alive. I think he had some sort of incident over the weekend. I don't know, what it was, whether it was, they say it was COVID. I'm kind of doubtful with that. I think it might have been something else. But
mini stroke, yeah.
Could have been a mini stroke, quite frankly. I mean, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something brought on medically in order to create a reason to make the change. I mean, I'm to that point where it could be very well be something like that. But going back to your question about revolution, I think that we are in the midst of a revolution. I don't know if it's going to be a bloody revolution, but here's what I'm concerned about is that anytime there's revolution, generally speaking, Christians have been at the point of the spear, you know, because we stand for the truth and, you know, that we're not willing to live by lies. True Christians aren't, because we can't. And so, you know, we're not willing to just go with whatever, you know, we're told, and you know, if we're willing to stand against the tide in terms of that. And so, of all people, we're going to be the ones that they're going to want to eliminate. And that's been true of every revolution, you know, the French Revolution, in Russia, what happened there, and when communism came into power with Stalin, you know, that they're going, anyone who stands against them there's something going to happen. China, same thing. I mean, there's something going to happen. Now, I don't know, is this going to be a bloody one where that happens? I hope not, but I do think that, you know, today there's tools in place that have never been, you know, that are unprecedented. And so I think that your ability to buy and sell, your ability to participate in society could potentially be affected if you don't stand with, you know, the ideology that's coming. I do think there's an ideology that's coming, and you know, whether it's months or whether it's years, I don't know, or even decades, but it seems like it's closer than ever before at our door. And, you know, I think that even with Hitler and the Jews, I mean, it was a slow, like it didn't happen all at once. You know, anytime this happens, they come and they arrest a few, and you know, the question is whether or not you're going to say something about it when they do that. And then it ends up being, you know, millions of people that get taken down. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And, you know, I think getting back to biblically, you know, what the biblical answer is, well, the biblical answer is that we have to, you know, we have to, as Christians, stand for the truth. I think we have to stand together. I think unity in this time is going to be key. You have to recognize that they're trying to make things as divisive as possible. And so, you know, there's going to be a push on our differences. There's going to be an emphasis on our differences, and even doctrinal differences, our you know, outlook on life and how we view things. You know, there's going to be a, you know, and are they're going to try to, I mean, they've been doing it. They've been trying to separate us from our kids. You know, the schools are indoctrinating us, our kids. The schools are, you know, I hate to say it, but they're a part of the state, and I don't hate to say it, it's true. You know, the public library system, you know, they're already part of this with, you know, the story hours that are going on with, you know, with transvestites and whatever mm-hmm. else is happening. And so, you know, I just think that as Christians, we have to really recognize what they're trying to do to this country and to our culture. And we have to band together around the truth. And I'm not saying that we need to, you know, in order to be together, that we need to give up the truth. No, it has to be that we have to really recognize the truth and really fight for the truth and not give in to the lies.
So as Christians, do we fight or do we just submit and go with wherever they're going to send us? Are we like the Jews during Germany?
No, I think we have to stand up. I mean, I don't know what that.
How much of a fight do we do? Like, are you saying actually take up arms or just rebel against, not in a nonviolent way?
I have to pray about the answer to that. I do know that we have to be willing to stand up, and you know, potentially that means, you know, local politics, like we, you know, becoming more involved with local politics. you know, because I think that it, that in order for this to work, I think you have to have, you know, you locally, you know, you have to have local officials that are going to be willing to do the bidding, where they're going to be willing to, if they're told to go a certain direction, they're going to go that direction. And so you have to have local officials that are going to stand against that. You know, I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I feel bad about even saying some of the things I've said because it feels.
Well, you should. No, but I was going to end it with this too. Like, let's see what the Lord has in store. The election hasn't happened yet. We don't know what's going to happen.
No.
It does look weird. But,
again, I'm no prophet.
Right.
And I'm never tried to say that I have some sort of corner on the future. I think that I do have one advantage in that I think any Christian who truly loves the Lord and truly has, you know, really a citizen of heaven can look at this all unfurling and see it objectively, like, and not necessarily see it. Yes, I mean, don't get me wrong. I have kids, as you know, and, you know, they want to have a life and they want to live a life that's, you know, that they want to be able to have kids and they want to have their own families. And I want to have them to have kids and their families and grandkids. And I want to grow old and care for my family. And I want to see them grow. And so I do think we need to fight and that we need to recognize what they're doing and what they're trying to do to us. And we need to fight against it. I think that fight starts in the church. And what I mean is that we, you know, purity of doctrine and you know, on the things that matter, like the essential issues that we unite on the essential issues and that we need to really have, you know, really work on our families and being strong in our families. And I think that we need to, you know, locally, that we need to really be focused on what's going on locally with our, you know, in local politics, like especially the, you know, like the local courts and count the, you know, the things that are going on at commission, you know, county commissioners and all those things that are going on in our county and what's going on here locally. We need to be focused that way. We need to be focused on being as self-sustaining as we can in the sense, I don't think that the answer is going to be, you know, people, you know, it's funny because all these guys, these preppers will have like a bug out vehicle and you know, they'll have their stockpile of food and all that. I don't think that's the ultimate answer. That might get you through a few weeks, like if something really does go down. But I think the real answer is really on a local level, having a network of people that you can depend upon, that you're generally like-minded with. And I think the church is a great place to start with that. I think that, you know, banding together with other like-minded churches would be, you know, where you can do commerce and you know, take care of one another through those channels would be a good thing to continue to build that, you know, those networks that way. I hope that I'm, you know, way off and that, you know, that truth prevails at that level, at the federal level, and we don't go through anything major, but it is, I do think it's a revolution, and the question is how it's going to play out.
Yeah, well, we'll see the next 16 weeks. So I guess we got to buckle our seatbelts, and we don't know. I mean, every week it's been weird, like what's going to happen this week? What's going to happen next week?
Yeah.
What could possibly happen?
Yeah, it's funny. 2020 was a big year, obviously, with COVID. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, COVID was such a big dominating thing, but then I think 2024 may be eclipsing 2020. I mean, but in a different, obviously in a different way, but in terms of the, you know, what's the major things that are happening. But I mean, 2020 was bad because you had COVID and you had the riots and, you know, during the summer, you know, the, you know, what's going on there. And then you had, you know, the fallout from COVID with the vaccines and stuff. And ultimately with what happened with Trump and losing the election and then, you know, whatever you believe happened there ultimately. And then you have January 6th and whatever you believe about that. But, you know, that's obviously 2021, but it was in the aftermath of 2020. But I think 2024 seems to be on par with 2020 and maybe even exceeding what happened in 2020. And we're only a little over halfway through.
Yeah, we still have 16 weeks to go before November, the election. Yes. So we'll see what can happen. Wow, yes. It's just weird. Yeah, so anyway, we're not trying to scare everybody. We're just trying to say, hey, this is what maybe is coming, and we want you to be prepared and be in prayer for our country. And we'll see what the Lord does here with this coming election.
Yeah, I think that's again, a great key is, you know, trusting the Lord, praying to the Lord, you know, that building those relationships in the church, building those relationships in the community that are meaningful relationships, building those relationships in your family, you know, where, you know, building that strong family core, continuing to really pour into that. I think that's going to be the key no matter what happens. You know, so
yeah,
good or bad.
And if things go south, and you just talked about it, all us Christians, we band together. So, and you have a pool at your place now, so I'll be walking over and...
But you have a pool here, so what's that?
That is true, but I was thinking if I needed water, you have... you're set, right? In case something happens, you got water.
I guess so, but it'll be chlorinated water, but...
Still drink it.
Drink it. It's drinkable.
And you have food stored somewhere?
No. Well, I've got some food in the freezer, but...
You got meat.
I got meat in the freezer.
We need to get some protein bars that'll last for a long time.
That's funny.
Twinkies last a long time, but you can't have Twinkies.
Man can't live on Twinkies alone.
Oh, you'd be surprised. You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.